Hello, welcome to Jesters, the Forgotten Stories of Northeast Comedy. This episode on Mark Sheridan comes with a content warning because it deals with the sad story of the suicide of the protagonist. I've tried to handle it as sensitively as possible and not gone into unnecessary detail, but if that type of content's likely to be upsetting for you, it might be best to skip this one. My name's Lee Kyle. I'm a stand-up comedian from South Shields, and I've long been interested in the sheer amount of comedians that emanate from my hometown and the towns nearby. One of the most fascinating stories to me begins a few miles to the south and more than 150 years in the past. For this episode, we'll talk about the pioneering tale and sad downfall of Sunderland's Mark Sheridan.
They fell in his lap one night, ye holy felt an awful fright. Look here, boys, said Percy Brown, I bumped a settling down in town. So expedite.
Born in Hendon in 1864 as Frederick Shaw, Mark Sheridan went from the docks of Sunderland to the very top of the bills of the music hall. Today, he's mostly forgotten, but in the early years of the last century, there were few names bigger. At his 1909 peak, he seemed unstoppable. However, within 10 years, he was dead. What happened? And why has he been forgotten? There's a strong tradition of people from working-class backgrounds looking to escape from poverty and the dangers of heavy industry. These days, we think of the traditional escapes as coming through the roots of sport and show business. However, in the waning days of the Victorian era, the Football League was as yet unfounded and sport was considered a gentlemanly pursuit on the whole. The only way out was through show business.
Oh, what a great variety of things we all see in the summertime. It is then the ladies wear the dress, clothes, the saucy bomb. They love to cool the shoulders and show off the chubby arms. You see the ventilation, see the lovely charms.
We don't have any remaining interviews with Mark Sheridan. We can only guess at his motivations. We do know, though, that there was a culture in the mines and shipyards, imposed from above, of self-improvement, of education, of quote-unquote bettering oneself. This wasn't done altruistically, this was done for purely capitalistic reasons. The more dependent a worker was on his employer for work and leisure, the more loyal he would have to be. However, for a talented few, this did undeniably lead to an escape. Sheridan joined a local amateur dramatics group. Whether as a means to escape or as a bit of fun, we can't know for certain. What we do know is that he took the name Mark Sheridan as a nod to his hero Mark Twain, as well as his mother's Irish heritage. He became a professional actor in Newcastle Theatre and travelled to Australia and South Africa as an actor, all before the end of 1895. He then became a star in the London music halls, including a brief stint as a double act with his wife Ethel as the Sheridans. It was, though, as a singer of comedy songs that he gained his greatest success. What is noticeable in his surviving songs is just how much his accent is unrecognisable from today's Sunderland twang. Even now, performers from this area often moderate their accent somewhat. I certainly have to speak more slowly when performing in Oxfordshire than I do in Whitley Bay. But before widespread radio, television and the internet, most people simply won't have heard a northeast accent before. It wouldn't be enough to simply modify it. It would have to go. And that's without even going into the manifold class-based reasons people in the arts change their accents, which must have been even more heightened in those days. Also noticeable in this, his earliest known recorded song, titled At the Football Match Last Saturday, is, I think, the main reason that he was taken to the hearts of the people.
I I'll tell you the tale of the pirate team, of the very worst players that ever was seen, and it all occurred on a fetch and green at a football match last Saturday. We started away from the town hall guy, each member he was ready for the fray. We swore we'd win or die that day at the football match last Saturday. We arrived at the ground about 2:30. The crowd is numbered 1,000 and a few. We said we'll show them what we can do at the football match last
Earlier,
Saturday.
I spoke about the Football League not being formed when Sheridan started his performing career, yet less than 20 years later, it is a phenomenon among the poor. It's begun to dominate the discourse in a way it still does today. What a thrill it must have been for fans of the music hall to see their lives reflected back at them in this way. This would have been real cutting-edge stuff. A comedian singing songs about football. Incredible. Funny songs too, with fast-paced lyrics and twists. It'd be a slight untruth to say that it stands up today. Comedy can age terribly, but you can certainly see why it was considered hilarious at the time.
And I kept him to ride, I threw him on his back, and there he lied, and I kicked him on the offside at the football match last Saturday.
In this short clip, we see the skill in which he sells the joke. The pause before singing offside makes a fairly stretched bit of wordplay work, and his frantic singing style adds some urgency to the recording. He took this relatable comedy to the next level with his most famous work, a song written by John Glover Kind in 1907, but made famous by Sheridan 2 years later. That song? I Do Like to Be Beside the Seaside.
Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside. I do like to be beside the sea. I do like to float along the prom, 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 when the brass band plays tiddly om, om, om. So just let
it's odd from this point in history to even think of I Do Like to Be Beside the Seaside as a comedy song or even a song at all. It's hard to imagine it was ever even written. It's the sort of song that feels like it's always been there. It's a song that belongs to childhood music lessons. It's a song that belongs to montages on morning television when they're doing an article about the state of the British seaside these days. So why don't we think of it as a comedy song? I think because we never hear it. It's just part of childhood that passes you by. You hear the chorus about the brass band playing tiddly om pom pom, but I don't think I've ever, until very recently, heard the verses, and it's the verses where the comedy is, and it's a very similar style of comedy to that in at the football match last Saturday. It's about ordinary people's lives. It's about the new seaside holiday boom that was happening at the time. Finally, working people could go on holiday. And not only is Mark Sheridan performing songs about this, he's performing very specific songs. He's highlighting the specificity of their lives in the way that the best observational comics do these days. There's lines in this song that you can imagine audience members in comedy clubs hearing these days and nudging each other and looking as if to say, "You do that. That's you."
But when you're just a Commodore Garden, Mr. Jones the Brown, at least up in town, you've got to settle down. You save your money all the year till summer comes around. Then away you go to a place you know, where the cockle shells are found.
Relatable songs about ordinary people. That's what made Mark Sheridan a star, not only in the music hall, but also in the then very lucrative pantomime scene. And I Do Like to Be Beside the Seaside was his showstopper. It's how he ended shows. It may seem languid in your memory, but I think you can understand why when you hear the raucous ending to it.
I should like to be beside the seaside. I'll stand all together. Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside. I do like to be beside the sea. I do like the building on the prom, 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 with the brass band plays in the pom, pom, pom. So just let me be beside the seaside. I'll be beside the heavenly. And the lost the real desire, I just like to be beside the seaside.
You wouldn't want to follow that. And although he had a lot more success in his career, Mark Sheridan never truly could.
That's not to suggest he wasn't still busy and still successful. Pantomime alone kept him busy and fairly wealthy, and he was still a big draw on the music hall scene. In fact, by the outbreak of World War I, he was something of a satirist. His song Belgium Put the Kibosh on the Khyber was a popular patriotic song of the Great War. At least, the early days of the Great War. It had fallen out of favour somewhat by 1915, but you may have heard it in the 1969 film Oh What a Lovely War.
Now he's lamed it in the woods, we won't buy his German goods, and we'll never taste his lager anymore. Stick to the British whiskey of Houston. The great fellow, the Kaiser, he and his German culture. He went to get a little bit of British physical culture. That'll do him. Now. What about General von Kluck? Kluck, kluck, kluck. He's no chicken. He'll never cluck again. The French have broken his right wing. I was speaking to an Irish friend of mine the other day, one of the Dublin Fusiliers, over home here, just with a shot through the arm. He said, I'll be back again in a fortnight, Sheridan. I said, well, how are you getting on with the Germans? Ours, says he, like a lot of rabbits in a warren.
In a lot of ways, Belgium Put the Kibosh on the Khyber's is most interesting work, certainly to listen to from this vantage point in history. It's the only time we hear what we may now term the stand-up comedy side of his music hall act. Fast-talking and witty and with a certain charm. Admittedly, it's very dated to modern ears, but you can hear what made Sheridan popular. And despite it being a political song, he never loses sight of his fan base. The references to not drinking German lager anymore would have certainly resonated. And although a lot of the content of this song is pretty uncomfortable to modern ears, it's certainly interesting to get a glimpse of the side of Mark Sheridan that was more than just a musical comedian. However, this song was to be his last unquestioned mainstream success. The popularity of music hall by this point was waning significantly. And Mark Sheridan was inextricably linked to that scene. In the way that nobody was looking out for the latest Cooler Shaker released post-Britpop, the demise of music hall dragged down all but the very biggest stars. Sheridan himself didn't go unaffected. Always an insecure man, his popularity waning didn't help with that, and he sunk into a depression. He moved, with some success, from music hall into revue, a form of variety theatre at once considered more classy, yet more sexualised than music hall. With 5 children to feed, and his popularity in decline, Sheridan returned to Glasgow, a city in which he was a big favourite and enjoyed a lot of his earliest successes. If the move to familiar surroundings was intended to make Sheridan feel more comfortable and less pressured, sadly, that's not how things worked out. He self-funded, to the tune of a mammoth £2,000, his own revue, Gay Paris. A spoof based on the romance between Napoleon and his wife Josephine. Featuring an incredible 40-strong cast, including the impressionist Sid May, 2 of his own children, Betty and Jack, and comedians flown over from America and soprano Dulcie Cariello. The gamble with his money and his career didn't pay off. Reviews of the first night were harsh, and the depressed Sheridan took his own life in 1918. In Glasgow's Kelvin Grove Park. At least, that's how the story is normally told on the rare occasions that Mark Sheridan has discussed these days. That's how the story has been passed down through show business folklore. The comedian that killed himself after a bad review. But the truth is, the reviews were strong. From the Daily Record, Mark Sheridan himself plays Napoleon in this clever and delightful skit and revels in the grotesque scenes and situations which he makes so irresistibly humorous. The review goes with a swing from start to finish, and there's not a dull moment throughout. from the Glasgow Herald. This highly amusing musical play, Gapery, is presented this week by a London company, of which Mark Sheridan, the well-known comedian, is the chief. The burlesque admirably fulfills its purpose of mirth-making and is, in every way, an attractive entertainment. That's not to say there were no bad reviews, although, if there were, no record of them exists. If anything, the show was a success. Indeed, following the death of her husband, Ethel took over the running of the show and it ran and toured for 5 successful months. So why, if not for a bad review, did Mark Sheridan take his own life? Indeed, did Mark Sheridan take his own life? Show business pal spoke up for him, said he was not the sort of man to do that, although of course we can never know what goes on inside somebody's brain. And while suicide is the most likely explanation, there was a wrinkle in this story yet. In October of 1917, Mark Sheridan had taken out a life insurance policy with Equitable Life. As part of that policy, Ethel Sheridan and Mark's 5 children would receive no money, were he to commit suicide within a year of the start of that policy. So they were subjected to a court case in which the plan was to show that Mark Sheridan's death was an accident, that since his days in South Africa, he'd actually always carried the revolver that took his life. George Robey, the great comedian, said that Sheridan was not a man to commit suicide because his play was not a success the first night. Indeed, it was suggested that he was quite a happy-go-lucky fellow. Counsel suggested that if every comedian who had a bad show shot himself, there'd be a lot of dead bodies in the Strand. There was certainly a dark humour to proceedings. Despite the best efforts, the executors lost. Mr. Baxter, the manager of the Coliseum, said in his view the first night of Gapery hadn't been a success and that Mark Sheridan was not up to his usual form as Napoleon. And this didn't help. The story of the fate of Mark Sheridan is a complicated one. We can't be 100% certain what happened and we certainly can't know why. But what we can be sure of is that the legend of the comedian who killed himself after a bad review is at best a huge simplification of a complicated story. Today, over a century on, Mark Sheridan's gravestone can be found in Cathcart Cemetery in Glasgow. It's a little hidden, but the pink granite gravestone is still in fairly good condition and a tree commemorates him in Kelvin Grove Park. The question remains, why is Mark Sheridan mostly forgotten today? The reason is probably that almost everybody is forgotten, no matter how big a success they are in their time. If Mark Sheridan was filmed, no evidence of that exists. All we have are some news reports and some scratchy and fuzzy recorded songs. Had he gone on to make films, maybe he'd be remembered, but really, from that era, there's only Charlie Chaplin still a household name. I guess, in all forms of entertainment, it's a great lesson that, as big as you are, it's all fairly transitory. But we can still remember Mark Sheridan. Anytime we're beside the seaside. Beside the sea.
I do like to be beside the seaside. I do like to be beside the sea. I do like to float along the prom, prom, prom. When the brass band plays, it'll be om, om, om.
That was the story of Mark Sheridan, part of Jesters, the Forgotten Stories of Northeast Comedy, a felt-now production in association with Tyne and Weir Archives and Museum, written and performed by Lee Kyle. Music is by Sammy Dobson. if you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in this episode, do remember the Samaritans are always on the other end of a phone line. You can call them on 116 123.